This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, mass shootings are nothing new in the United States of America. They are not new, but they are still, when one sees them, terribly traumatic for people in the United States, for some people in the United States. And last weekend, there was yet another example. 10 people were murdered in a supermarket called Tops. This was in New York, and the crime was committed by an 18-year-old, Peyton S. Gendron, who was well-armed with rifles and stuff, and also had the means to film the carnage he was creating. We're joined now from Washington by Niall Stanage, associate editor of The Hill newspaper, a respected Washington newspaper for not being as partisan as many other media outlets. Niall is also the White House columnist for The Hill. Niall, as I pointed out there, these incidents are not new, but they don't fail to shock certainly those of us here, and I'm sure many people in America as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the shooting in Buffalo, New York was a particularly stark example of that. Incredibly shocking stuff, terrible stuff. I mean, you'd people out doing their shopping who end up murdered in a grocery store. The motivation seems plainly racist. Of the total 13 people who were shot, 11 were black. All 10 of the people who were fatally shot were black. And in fact, Mr. Gendron published an online manifesto, maybe too grand a word, an online rant of some length, in which he made no bones at all about the fact that he was targeting black people, and in fact had journeyed some, he lives quite a long way away from this supermarket, but had journeyed to it specifically because it's in a heavily black neighborhood of Buffalo, and therefore, was in his kind of twisted mind, an inviting target.
Yes, and he had been influenced by online stuff, much of which I think is desperate and unbelievable. One of the theories that, of course, benefited most from the online stuff was the idea that Joe Biden was not the legitimate winner and that Donald Trump had the election stolen from him. Another very heavily underlined conspiracy theory online is what's called the Great Replacement Theory. Not just online, people like Tucker Carlson on Fox News, the most popular cable news channel, and he is the most popular of their presenters, they claim to be believers in the Great Replacement Theory. Can you explain to us what the Great Replacement Theory is?
There are a few different variants on it, but basically it is the idea that shadowy groups, whether that is elites or sometimes Jewish people, are in the process of intentionally replacing white Americans with non-white people, whether that is primarily in terms of encouraging migration from south of the United States, or whether it is in some bizarre fashion intended to sort of decrease the white population. It has had a long history in racist circles. Tucker Carlson has a particularly, in my view, disingenuous stance on this, in which he sort of says that he is not, he dislikes the label Great Replacement Theory while trafficking in what seems almost exactly that. I mean, for example, he has talked about people trying to replace the current electorate with new people who vote for Democrats, basically, or the replacement of, I'm quoting here, legacy Americans with more obedient people from faraway countries. So that is, whether he likes to admit it or not, a classic Great Replacement Theory stuff, and does show the extent to which that has been, to some extent, mainstreamed in American society, having been, you know, a marginal theory, a theory confined to the racist fringes for a long time.
Yes, and one should say about Tucker Carlson that before Russia invaded Ukraine, he singularly, really, among American broadcasters, was singing Vladimir Putin's praises and doing it nightly. He apparently has eased off a bit now, and anyone who has seen the barbaric behavior of the Russian troops would naturally want to distance themselves from what are serious war crimes. Carlson has to some extent. The point here is, I mean, one of Rupert Murdoch's sons decided to walk away from the family. This is a Murdoch operation, pure and simple. This peddling this kind of stuff, there's no doubt about that, is there?
Not really that it's a Murdoch operation. No, I don't think there's any doubt that it's a Murdoch operation. They have come under pressure quite frequently, I would say with increasing frequency in recent years, from people who are object to the stuff they put out and therefore try to encourage or lead advertiser boycotts. And it is believed, for example, that Tucker Carlson's show, despite its massive ratings, is not as much of a money spinner. I mean, I'm sure it's profitable, but not as much of a money spinner as you might expect, because advertisers are many of them, are reluctant to be associated with Tucker Carlson. In relation to the Ukraine issue, I think it was he was more hewing to an isolationist position. His position was, why would the United States get involved, really? But this other stuff, like the replacement theory and the constant pumping of noxious sort of innuendos into the American body politic, is something that he does with great frequency. And I think he does it perhaps more effectively, if we can use that word, than most others, even on Fox News. He's a curious character. I mean, he's not an unintelligent man by any stretch of the imagination, but my personal view is he traffics in these things because there's money in doing so and viewing figures in doing so. And it's pretty alarming stuff a lot of the time.
Yes, and this young man, Peyton S. Gendron, the 18-year-old, was an avowed racist. Mm-hmm. He also referenced watching stuff online. He had prepared for, as I understand it, for a couple of years to commit this appalling atrocity. And he doesn't consider himself to be crazy.
Not as far as we know. I mean, in fact, to your point, I'm not totally sure how long he was planning for, but he certainly wrote about making what he would rather grandiosely see as a sort of a reconnaissance mission before doing this shooting. He went apparently to the supermarket before the instance where he murdered all these people to see, you know, what he could do to try to work out who he could kill, whether there would be security guards on duty, things like that. There was, in fact, a security guard on duty who was killed in the shooting while trying to stop the shooter. So there was all of this planning involved. To your point about whether he considers himself crazy or not, I believe, and these are, of course, initial reports, he intends to plead not guilty. And the basis of that, and this is purely based on media reporting, it's not like I've spoken to his lawyer, but I believe he's going to, or he still believes that he was right to do what he did because of these racist and wild beliefs that he holds. So that's where we stand with him.
Now, Joe Biden spoke about this incident on Wednesday. I saw him speak. He was very emotional and clearly, like many decent people, very moved by this. He said, and I'm quoting, "The American experiment in democracy is in danger," close quote. And there was no sense in which he was electioneering or in any way polemicizing this. He expressed as a sincere belief. That phrase, "the American experiment in democracy," struck me because we mentioned it before when we spoke to you in January. One of the Supreme Court justices, Stephen Breyer, resigned from the court. And in his valedictory speech at the end, he said he hoped that the American experiment in democracy would survive. He said, "It depends on my children and my grandchildren." So the idea that, first of all, democracy in America is an experiment. Secondly, that it is, as the president expressed it, in danger, is extraordinary when you put it together with the Trump phenomenon, these shootings, the Tucker Carlson thing, and another remarkable stat that you sent me this week in a piece you wrote, a very good piece you wrote for The Hill. There's a poll that shows 76% of Republican voters believe Joe Biden was not the legitimate winner of the 2020 election. That is a truly staggering number of people. It means effectively only 24% believe that Biden is the legitimate president of the United States.
Exactly, yes. To that specific point for a start, Eamon, I mean, it's only to state the obvious, really, to say that in a democracy, you need the outcome of elections to be respected. If people do not believe that elections are legitimate, then they won't give their faith to democratic institutions and the whole system will break down. To have 3/4 of Republican voters believe that President Biden was not legitimately elected is a huge, huge problem, a big flashing red warning light. Now, then there is the broader topic about the danger to American democracy. And in the speech that you're referring to from President Biden, he went on to say, and this is a direct quote, "It's in danger this hour. Hate and yes. fear being given too much oxygen by those who pretend to love America but who don't understand America." And that comment is obviously much broader than elections. That is about a kind of stoking of grievance, racial and otherwise, which clearly has been going on for some years in the United States. You and I have spoken yes. a number of times before about the fact that Donald Trump was in some ways an accelerant of those trends and a product yes. of those trends. He wasn't really the origin of them. And that process has reached such an alarming pitch now that I do not think the comments from Biden or Breyer are hyperbole. I think that that danger legitimately does exist. And, you know, right now, Biden is in the White House and Democrats have the majorities in the Congress. But the latter part of that is likely to change this November. And then there will be a 2024 election where we'll just have to see whether people believe the outcome, whether the election is fairly conducted. All kinds of questions are arising at this juncture for democracy in America.
Yes, and I mean, the thought has crossed many minds of people I know. It certainly crossed my mind. And it is this. Had Donald Trump been in the White House when Putin launched his invasion of Ukraine and committed the war crimes and all kinds of atrocities that we have yet to learn the full extent of. Given Donald Trump's relationship or lack of one with the NATO allies, for example, given his curious relationship with Putin, which was symbolized by that press conference they gave together in Helsinki, I believe, in which Trump appeared the supplicant and appeared almost intimidated by Putin. Thank God he wasn't the president of the United States when this invasion took place. But he has a very good chance of being president in the United States in 2024. Have Americans actually thought to themselves, is there any evidence, for example, that the consequences of a Trump presidency right now for Ukraine, for Europe, and for NATO would be really mind-blowing?
Some of them have thought of that, I think. I mean, you're quite right, obviously, that we would be in a different world had Trump still been in power when Putin had done this. There's really very little evidence that Donald Trump believes in NATO, for example. There's certainly no real evidence that he has any interest in building alliances or holding together alliances in the way that Biden, whatever Biden's other faults, has really done during this conflict. And then you mentioned the whole Pandora's box of Trump's attitude toward Putin and toward Russia. So you put all that together, and obviously the American response would have been vastly different. It's interesting, you know, Eamon, I'm old enough to remember elections like, say, George W. Bush v. Al Gore, where it was a trendy thing to say, oh, well, there's no real difference between the parties. I mean, even in that case, there clearly was, as subsequent events proved. But right now, I mean, the difference between the parties is such a gulf, or particularly, I should say, the gulf between, say, Trump and Biden on something like Ukraine is massive. So having said all of that, that has clearly not by any means ruled out Donald Trump's chances of coming back to the White House after the 2024 election. He is still clearly the front runner for the Republican nomination in 2024. Whoever the Republican nominee is will have a fighting chance. There is, it's worth pointing out, evidence that Trump is fairly unpopular with the population at large. And that's a point that I think we've made on this podcast before. But he is still very popular, approval ratings in the 70 or 80% range with Republican voters. And I don't see who within the Republican Party would beat him if he sought the nomination.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, just to move on slightly to the primaries that are taking place in America. These are within the Republican and Democratic Party, people running against each other as they do for presidential nominations to get the nomination to run in the House or the Senate. Trump's endorsement is felt to be an advantage. And how has that manifested itself? For example, I mentioned State Senator Doug Mastriano, who is going to be the Republicans' nominee in Pennsylvania, a key state, one has to say, and certainly in presidential terms. He has Trump's endorsement. How have those with the endorsement fared? And is there any evidence to suggest he can be the difference between one kind of Republican and another?
There is some evidence of that. Actually, Trump's nominees have had a bit of a mixed record so far, but Mastriano is one of the electorally strongest, but to many people of a centrist or liberal disposition, one of the most alarming victors. Doug Mastriano, as you said, a state senator, will be the Republican nominee for governor in Pennsylvania. Mastriano is someone who has trafficked in the same false allegations of election fraud as Trump has done. And he also came to Washington on January the 6th. He says he did not enter the Capitol itself, but he certainly appears to have marched to the Capitol with other people seeking to overturn the results of the election. For understandable reasons, I think, Eamon, outside the United States, people sometimes don't maybe pay a great deal of attention to races outside the presidency, and certainly not necessarily to gubernatorial races in states. But in Pennsylvania, the governor gets to appoint the state's Secretary of State. And the Secretary of State is the person who essentially administers elections. So if Mastriano were to win the general election in November, he would then have that power. And, you know, then you have somebody who was at January the 6th having that power.
Yes, and also somebody who pushed at the time for an alternate slate of electors to be appointed by the state legislature in Pennsylvania, a move that would have overturned the election result in the state if it had been successful. And there are examples all over the place, aren't there, of what's called election reform in Georgia, for example, which is likely to disadvantage people who might vote Democrat.
That's right.
In the presidential election.
That's right. There's a lot of there's a lot of controversy over what is essentially perceived to be voter suppression in a number of ways and in a number of different states. And in fact, to that point, Mastriano in Pennsylvania would want to, in the name of quote-unquote election security, throw out all existing voter registrations. People have to register to vote in this country, as you're probably aware. He would start that process from scratch, and therefore people who didn't re-register would be disenfranchised. He would claim that he's doing that for election security purposes, or is proposing that for election security purposes. Many other people would see that as a fairly blatant effort toward voter suppression.
Now, the kind of people that Donald Trump is endorsing, let's have a look at Representative Madison Cawthorn, who is a Republican. He was defeated in his primary by a state senator, another Republican, although Cawthorn was endorsed by Trump.
That,
what sort of chap is is Madison Cawthorn?
Well, he's a more colourful character than some Republicans. I guess we can say that for him. He has had a whole series of controversies around him, some involving firearms, another instance in which he was a photograph emerged from wearing woman's lingerie. Another, he's a very conservative person in his avowed beliefs, I should point out.
Yes.
And then he also claimed, to consternation from some of his colleagues, that he had been invited to orgies while in Washington, and that I think some of his colleagues had taken cocaine, or he had witnessed people taking cocaine or something of that nature. All of that was a little bit much for the Republican voters of his district in North Carolina, which is a fairly conservative district, and the Donald's endorsement was therefore not enough to save him. Cawthorn's defeat was interesting in that it was a fairly rare victory for the Republican so-called establishment over the more Trumpian wing. But as I say, I mean, Trump's candidates have had a mixed record. In the Pennsylvania Senate primary, for example, Mehmet Oz, better known as Dr. Oz, a TV personality, he, I think, is almost certainly going to head into an automatic recount. It's an extremely, extremely close race there. He, as I'm speaking to you right now, has a very, very small lead, about 0.2%. And so he was also backed by Trump, and that has been enough to get him into a tiny lead, but not enough to propel him to any kind of sweeping victory.
Now to something that affects Ireland, and indeed may well affect the British, who are acting the idiot as usual under Boris. Nancy Pelosi last evening made a speech in which she warned the British that there would be no trade deal with the United States if they messed around with the Good Friday Agreement, and they are messing around with the Good Friday Agreement, and they're going to legislate unilaterally to change elements of the what's known as the Northern Ireland Protocol, which is part of the agreement they signed with the European Union. They are in effect going to break international law unilaterally. This is a matter of some import to people like Pelosi, Richie Neal, the Democrats in particular, and indeed to Joe Biden. Can you confirm that the degree of commitment there is should Britain misbehave badly, which is in fact what they're doing?
Yeah, I think there is a genuine commitment there on the part of the Biden administration and some of the Democrats you mentioned. Biden himself, obviously very proud of his Irish roots. He'll kind of quote Yeats or Seamus Heaney at the drop of a hat, but is also, of that generation that obviously very clearly remembers the Troubles the torturous negotiations that led to the Good Friday Agreement, in which, of course, George Mitchell, a Democratic senator or former senator by that stage, was very centrally involved. Pelosi's statement, which just came out on Thursday, was very strong. I mean, particularly by the standards of, normal diplomatic language. She called it deeply concerning that the UK was, as she put it, seeking to unilaterally discard the Northern Ireland Protocol. And she said plainly that if the United Kingdom, and this is a direct quote, chooses to undermine the Good Friday Accords, the Congress cannot and will not support a bilateral free trade agreement with the United Kingdom. And so she could hardly be more clear than that. The thing I will say about Pelosi is, in this country, she's a fairly, controversial figure, beloved by Democrats and hated by Republicans. As a political strategist, she's very, very good, and she's as hard as nails as well, which helps.
Yes.
And so if she says that, that's going to happen. Here's the asterisk, though. That if she says that, that's what's going to happen so long as she holds the majority in the House. After November's elections, it seems unlikely she will hold the majority in the House. And then we'll have to see. I don't think, to be clear, that there's an American Republican impetus to go fully along with Boris. But I'm also not sure there would be the same level of commitment as there is from people like Biden and Pelosi.
And of course, November could be the end of Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House of Representatives, because it's highly likely they will lose both the Senate and the House, and the House in particular, where they only have a very small majority.
Yes, absolutely. I think the House is the one that they're almost certain to lose. The Senate, Democrats have an uphill battle to hold on to the Senate, but you can see a pathway through which they can do so. It's very, very difficult to imagine Democrats holding the House while Biden's approval ratings are where they are, which is high 30s, low 40s. So that's
yes, and just a final question on that. I mean, traditionally, the Irish-American lobby is strong with the Democrats, very strong. And even at times, Ronald Reagan came to Ireland when he was president. But if November produces what we think it will do, which is a president who is really a prisoner in the White House on many issues, that if the Senate and the House go to Republicans, in terms of trade deals for the British, support for the Good Friday Agreement, are the Republicans as engaged, shall we say, as the Democrats are in that effort?
I don't think they're as engaged, no. I don't think that there is the same amount of determination on the Republican side.
Yes.
Now, as I say, I don't necessarily think that means they'll be, you know, sprinting to do a trade deal with the UK, or that they'll be just, you know, fully on Boris Johnson's side in all things. But I don't, if there were, for example, a Republican Speaker of the House, which would be most likely to be Kevin McCarthy, my Kevin, as Trump sometimes refers to him, despite the last name, I would not expect Kevin McCarthy to make the kind of statement that Nancy Pelosi made on Thursday about this. Just because I don't think he cares particularly, essentially.
And just a final point. Donald Trump, by his very nature, is attracted to Britain, to royalty, to the Queen, to Boris, and all of that. And he would be predisposed, I suggest, to support glorious, great Britain rather than the poor old Irish.
Yeah, or the European Union, which he dislikes for all sorts of peculiar reasons. Yeah. I think he blames them for not allowing wind farms off one of his golf courses in Scotland or something like that. The details of that story are only dim in my mind. But to your actual serious point, Trump is clearly, you know, pro-Brexit, pro the UK, pro Boris Johnson, pro Nigel Farage, for whatever that's worth.
It's worth a lot.
So you put all those ingredients together, and if we do indeed have a re-elected President Trump about 2.5 years from now, I think it'll be he'll be singing a very different story from President Biden on this issue.
Okay, Niall, we're very grateful to you for joining us from Washington. That's Niall Stanage, Associate Editor of The Hill. You can get to read his stuff. It really is excellent, and we're very happy when he contributes to The Stand. Thanks to Niall. Thanks to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.